कुंज बिहारी गय गोपी जन वल्लब गिरिधर धारी यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंदन यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंदन यमुना तीर रन चारी यमुना तीर रन चारी राधा गिरी भगवान की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवत गीता की श्री कृष्ण जन्माष्टमी महामहोत्सव की Actually, Bhakti Yoga Reconnect is quite an ingenious title. for Krishna consciousness, because the whole process of Krishna consciousness is transformational or reformational or reconnecting with our original consciousness. And Prabhupada, I'm sure you took that from Prabhupada's teachings, that we have to reconnect our, it's like a machine, part of a machine, Prabhupada would say. When a bolt is separated from a machine, or a nut is separated from a machine, the machine doesn't work and the bolt is useless. So when we put it together, the machine works, the hole works, and the bolt or the nut has it serves its function. And we have a function to serve as a servant of God. And this Krishna Janmashtami or any festival or Krishna consciousness is about reviving our service attitude, our mentality as servants of God and not as the competitive God, the competing God, that we want to be the supreme controller and enjoyer. But we can feel satisfied and peaceful and happy when we're in a subservient position to God. And Krishna consciousness, through the reconnection of our service attitude, provides us the opportunity to be happy, to be satisfied, and to be content. And we like to share something tonight to help in that meditation and to help us sort of prod us in that direction, to help us to establish that realization that there's something greater than us, there's a greater force out there. That's us, and that something greater than us, we consider it to be God or Krishna, and that Krishna is a person, which is quite a unique selling point of Hare Krishna, that the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Godhead, is person, is a personality. And that can be frightening sometimes, that the Supreme is a person. And we're going to read one shloka from chapter 7, which is called Knowledge of the Absolute. And in this chapter, Krishna is teaching his at this stage of the program, we'd ask everyone to put their phones on silent mode, please, or flight mode, if you've got them. Yeah, so let's read what Krishna has to say. In this chapter, Krishna is teaching Arjuna how to see him everywhere, a yoga of seeing Krishna, a yoga of total connection with Krishna, to see Krishna in the plants, to see him in the stars, in the sky, in the mountains, in the rivers, to see Krishna in everything. It's knowledge of the Absolute Truth. So text number 7 says, Mata parataram nanyat kinchidasti dananjaya mai savamidam protam sutre mani gana iva. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, another name for Arjuna, Dananjaya, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. Sutri mani gana iva. Purport. There is a common controversy over whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, the Absolute Truth is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and this is confirmed in every step. In this verse in particular, it is stressed that the Absolute Truth is a person. That the personality of Godhead is the Supreme Absolute Truth is also the affirmation of Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. That is, the Supreme Absolute Truth, personality of Godhead, is Lord Krishna, who is the primeval Lord, the reservoir of all pleasure, Govinda, and the eternal form of complete bliss and knowledge. These authorities leave no doubt that the Absolute Truth is the Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. The impersonalist, however, argues on the strength of the Vedic version given in the Svetasvatara Upanishad, which states, in the material world, Brahma, the primeval living entity, within the universe is understood to be the supreme amongst the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is the transcendence, who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental, but those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. The impersonalist puts more stress on the word arupam. That is, but this arupam is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, as described in the Brahma Samhita quoted above, and other verses in the Svetasvatara Upanishad. Om Ajnati Mirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karam Hayam Darati Svaparantikam Namasreshta Manumapi Sachi Putram Trasvarupam Rupam Tasya Garam Uru Purim Maturim Gostavritim Radha Kundagiri Vadam Aho Radhika Marava Sam Prapto Yasapatita Sri Gurundam Nitosmi Mata Parataram Nanyat Kinchi Rasti Dananjaya Maisavamiram Proktam Sutre Manigana Iva. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. I was thinking for the sake of Madhuri Mataji and one or two others who might have heard me once or twice today to try and say something a little bit different, you know, keep them awake and keep me awake. But then I was thinking, well, Sri Krampabhu's here, every time I see him, he's always singing Hare Krishna. Every day he just sings Hare Krishna. He doesn't do a different mantra. So if he can get away with it, Madhuri Mataji is going to have to put up with a third version of the appearance of Lord Krishna. It'll have a slightly different melody and a slightly different mood. We never tire of hearing the reason behind Krishna's appearance and his activities. Last Wednesday we took the children out to visit some... We're doing a little interfaith program at the school. So we're trying, we've got a peace focus on peace for the term. And it's been one of the most violent terms in our school history, by the way. But it's very ironic, you know, we've got this big peace term and everything's supposed to be all peace and there's been bloodshed every second day at the school. But anyway, we're going to get there. And we thought we'd do peace integration and interfaith thing. So we're taking the kids out to the Buddhist temple down in Botany, and a very beautiful temple down there, very stunning. And we took them to a church, an Anglican church in Grey Lynn, St. Columba. And it was interesting to compare the two and to see the children, their response to being exposed to these different types of religions, and very healthy for them, I think. I was thinking when I was there, I wish I had been taken inside a mosque or a church, a different church or a temple when I was a kid, to see what people believe and how they act and respond to different things. Anyway, we didn't get a huge amount of response from the Buddhists because it was beautiful, the building was very awesome, but unfortunately we couldn't understand that they were Taiwanese Buddhists and their language skills weren't quite up for it. So we couldn't get everything that they were trying to tell us. And they had a wonderful message, I'm sure, but we couldn't pick it all up because, there was a construction site right next to us as well. That didn't help. But besides the construction site, the pronunciation was a little difficult for us to hear. But it was a lot of heart there and there was a lot of good feeling, but didn't get much knowledge from it. But one of the Buddhist people that was showing us around said to me, came up to me at the end, and she said, what are you guys doing here? Why did you come to the Buddhist temple? And I explained what we're doing there. And, you know, I had to keep telling her we're Hare Krishna. She just thought we're a Christian church. You know, dressed like this, we're Christians. And she goes, what are Christians coming here for? And we're not Christians, we're Hare Krishnas. you know, what do Christians believe? What's the essence of, essence of Christianity? And I said, well, I go and ask a Christian. I don't know, I'm a Hare Krishna. She kept saying, you know, what is it about you Christian people? You know, why are you so fascinated about Buddhism? I said, all right, then I'm a Christian. But anyway, she said, what's the essence? So I was put on the spot. And I thought, okay, what's the essence of Hare Krishna? Hare Krishna belief, even if she thought it was Christianity. So what's the essence of Hare Krishna? And my first response to her was, well, the essence of Hare Krishna belief is that we're servants of God, that we're here to serve God. And she said, well, how do you do that? How do you serve God? And I said, well, you serve God by chanting his names, by through mantra, through meditation, through associating with other people who are doing it, through eating and offering food to God. We make offerings to God and doing various things like this. And she was kind of picking it up. She was quite excited about the whole concept about serving God. But in Buddhism, God is not really a person. There's a statue of Buddha, but he's not a worshipful God. You don't worship him. You put fruit in front of him and wave incense and stuff there, but you're not doing it. He's not really a person there that you're offering to. So it's not a personal reciprocation. But they do have some interesting philosophy about peace and overcoming desires. That's a big part of Buddhism, and dealing with desires. So dealing with anger and dealing with greed and dealing with envy and dealing with illusion. They definitely have a philosophy. It's called, the Four Noble Truths. And within the Four Noble Truths, they deal with, one of them is to deal with these desires. And it was off to Grey Lynn, without much knowledge really, but off to Grey Lynn, and we were happy. I was happy to have shared with her something about Krishna consciousness or Christianity or whatever she thinks it was, but it was good for her to hear that we believe in service to God. And by the way, when I got home, I was reading in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the very first purport I read, Prabhupada said, the essence of the Hare Krishna movement is to teach people to serve God. And so I thought, okay, I said the right thing. It was the first sentence I read when I got home. And we went to Grey Lynn, and it was much more, it was very Christianity, Western, and interesting, not unlike this hall. Except there was, a crucifix and an altar in it and a few other, and an organ, quite an awesome organ in there. And the presenter, the priest, the Reverend Susan Adams, she made a presentation, quite a good presentation, to the kids. And the kids were quite fascinated by her presentation. They'd never been inside a church. It was like, wow, this is so amazing. And it was quite a low-key church. If you've been inside some churches, it was pretty low-key. But the kids were fascinated by it. Wow. And so she was quite good, and she was talking about peace and humility and the importance of, developing qualities, godly qualities. And she did connect with the kids, and the kids shared that with me, that she connected with them. But one thing that sort of struck in our minds was, from going to the Buddhist temple and from going to the Christian temple, the Christian church, Anglican church, was that in Krishna consciousness, in the Bhagavad Gita and in our practices, there's so much, it's so comprehensive and very, very vast, covering a vast array of culture and intellectual endeavors and very, very, very deep and culturally rich, a very culturally rich background that we have from our tradition, compared to the Anglican presentation, which was quite good. It was quite enlivening in many ways, but it was a little bit staid, a bit sort of, it probably reminded me of my, my church days in St. Brendan's, when our whole family used to line up at 8:15 on Sunday morning, and we took a whole pew. The 12 O'Sullivan kids went into the pew right at the entrance, right, in case someone threw a wobbly, and we had to exit quickly, so we just come in the door, and that was our pew. We had a name on it, you know. Yeah, Sullivan Pew. And Mum was at one end and Dad was at the other end. We were in there like, and probably I had some flashbacks. I think it was a bit hard for me to deal with it. I needed a little bit of counselling, I think. But no, it was quite good. I enjoyed it, and I don't regret being brought up a Catholic at all. And anyway, it's interesting because she was asked a question. That's why I was talking about Christian. I was thinking, why did I bring up her, Susan Adams? She was asked a question by one of the kids. The kids, she said, any questions? And practically every kid put their hand up. I was like, I've never seen so many questions. And she was like, poor, you know. All right, she was, I don't know what she was expecting. But she probably wasn't expecting 50 hands to go up. And so the very first question was, what was the purpose for Jesus' appearance? Why did Jesus come to this world? That was the first question. And she said, well, that's a good question. There's no answer to that question. And, you know, she's a PhD in theology or something. And she said, why did you come to this world? You know, like a 6-7-year-old kid. And, well, you can't answer it. Well, how can I answer it? Sort of thing, you know. So she didn't answer it. And we were thinking, you know, the teachers were looking at each other going, boy, you know, that's a bit of a unusual response. You would think somebody who'd studied theology and had permanent head, a PhD, would give you a pretty good response, you know. But that was it. And, you know, some of her other answers were okay, but that left us really wondering about the church and whether we are going to, you know, go back to the Anglican church. Actually, we've got an Anglican priest coming to speak to the kids as well. One of our teachers is from an Anglican background, obviously. So her father is a minister. He's going to come and talk. But we have so much knowledge about Krishna, why he came, what he looks like, who his parents are, what he does when he gets here, what he does when he goes back. And there's a lot of information that we have, a lot of knowledge. And these kids are exposed to it from day one of their lives, that Krishna comes to protect his devotees and to reciprocate with his devotees, to be with his devotees. And also to sort out the demons and establish religious principles. But that can be done, as Jay said, through other means. But particularly Krishna wants to come to reciprocate with his devotees. And that's our Janmashtami focus. And I was sharing in my last two classes about Devaki, the mother of Krishna. Because we know that Krishna's got a mother, he's got a father, and he has brothers and friends and associates. All relationships are within Krishna consciousness, and they're perfected through Krishna, all the rasas. So Devaki is the mother, known as the mother of Krishna. It has a mother called Devaki. And Devaki is a very amazing personality. Prabhupada says she's the mother of bhakti, of devotion, Devaki. And the reason why she's the mother of bhakti is that she helps us to understand that we need to prepare ourselves to receive Krishna into our hearts. And we do that by working on anattas, working on things that are not of wealth, no value within our heart. And Devaki, she was harassed by her brother, Kamsa, who was considered, you know, he was a very, very serious demon, her brother. And he had received an omen to say that the eighth child of your sister is going to kill you. And so his response to that was that he will kill his sister straight away. But Vasudeva was able to negotiate that immediate danger, navigate around that immediate danger, and convince Kamsa that there's no harassment needed, there's no worry, Devaki is not going to kill you, I'm not going to kill you. You know, you're going to survive at least, it's going to take 8 years at least to get that eighth child out. So just relax. And so he did, he accepted it. But then he decided, no, you know, I should kill all the children, who knows? Any one of them could be the one who's come to kill me. He has this very deep-seated envy and enmity toward Krishna, Vishnu. So he decided to go on this killing spree. So every time a child was killed, was sent, Vasudev took the child to Kamsa, and Kamsa would knock him on the head and kill them. And the first one that he killed was Kirtiman. And he was, they represent different types of anathas. Or these six personalities are the six enemies of bhakti. And the first one was Krodha. They're the six, the Krodha, which is anger. So we've got to release that anger from our consciousness before we can receive Krishna, before we can interact with Krishna. We need to do something with that negative emotion of anger, the anger that arises from frustration of enjoying our desires. We need to work on that anger. And Devaki does, she releases that anger. And karma, lust, or desire, and loba, greed to expand that capacity to enjoy more and more and more. We need to work on that and to overcome that. And we do this not by suppressing it, but we have anger and we hold it in, and we just hold it in until we burst. Or we have lusty desire to enjoy the material energy, and we just bite the bullet until, you know, our jaw is broken. And or we have this insatiable greed that we need to experience some satisfaction through the senses, or the mind, or the intelligence. So Krishna consciousness provides a process, and I used to believe Buddhism didn't, but apparently Buddhism does, provide a process for transforming that anger and that lust and that greed, so that there's a way to deal with it. They're emotions that they're real, they're part of our being, and we need to learn to deal with them. And it's said that when we reconnect with Krishna, when we're connected in Krishna consciousness, then we overcome lusty desires that are based upon our identification with the body. But our desires become dovetailed to Krishna, that we want to satisfy Krishna, make Krishna happy, establish Krishna as the supreme, etc. So anger, greed, lust, and madness. This madness, it's explained in the Bhagavatam that this madness comes from, this is pramatta. Intense madness comes from trying to enjoy the senses. That we just, our life's purpose is to eke out as much sense gratification as we can from the material energy. And that makes you mad. That's a surefire definition of madness. One of the universal definitions of a stable mental condition that was presented by one great psychologist is that a person who is capable of delaying or immediate gratification, he called it. If you can delay that, if you can put it off, then you're considered to be in a healthy mental condition. But those who don't have a healthy mental state, they have to be constantly satisfying their mind, constantly satisfying their senses. So madness comes from this identification with the body. When you identify with the body, you're considered to be mad. Prabhupada said we're all mad. All of us are mad. Some people are locked up mad and some people are free mad, but we're all mad because we have this identification with the body. And so long as we identify with the body, janasya moha yamahamimeti, we fall into illusion. And we think in terms of I, me, and mine. And the whole world just revolves around me. I'm the center of that. So madness is something that we have to deal with before we can really access bhakti. We have to deal with that madness. And moha, illusion, janasa moha. That illusion that I'm this material body. And we in Krishna consciousness, our focus is that we're spiritual and we have unlimited acts to perform as spiritual beings, unlimited things we can do as devotees of Krishna. And all of that becomes kirtan. all of that becomes a form of glorification of God, a form of glorification of Krishna, when we're connecting with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada says that if you can connect your work, if you connect your intellectual activity, if you connect your creativity with God, that becomes Sankirtan. That becomes a powerful form of Kirtan, of Krishna consciousness. And the last one is Matsadya, or enviousness. The sixth one is envious. And we become envy because we identify with the material body and we want something that someone else has got beyond our quota, but we want that thing. We become fixated upon that. And we'll do anything we can to make sure that if we don't get it, that other person doesn't get it either. And that's called Matsarya, envy of other living entities. And Bhagavatam and the process of Krishna consciousness is for those who are free from envy, who don't entertain that envious mentality. So Devaki, she expelled these six demons, you can say, from herself and her consciousness, from her body. And then she prepared for Balaram, he's a brother of Krishna. And Devaki was pregnant for her seventh pregnancy, and every one of them had been killed by her demoniac brother. And the seventh one, she became especially effulgent, and it said that after 7 months of the pregnancy, it appeared that she had a miscarriage. And everybody was lamenting in the palace that, oh, poor, she's had this miscarriage. And it said even Kamsa was lamenting. Maybe he was lamenting he didn't get to bash this kid on the head, but he was lamenting, he was crying that, oh, my sister had a miscarriage. What a sad affair. This killed six of her other daughters, her sons, but anyway, this had a miscarriage. So that actual child went from the womb of Devaki to Rohini, who was a wife of Vasudev, in Vrindavan. She was in Vrindavan, and Balaram was born. And he was the one who prepared the way for Krishna's appearance. Because Balaram is the original spiritual master. Balaram is that bhakti, pure, the personification of bhakti. While Devaki is the manifestation of pure bhakti, Balaram teaches that bhakti. He comes to teach. He's a provider, he's a supporter, he's an encourager, he's like a coach. He gives Krishna consciousness to everybody and connects everybody with Krishna, with his little brother, Balaram. So Balaram appears. And then the eighth child appears. And when Devaki was pregnant with Krishna for the eighth time in the prison cell of Kamsa in Mathura, she was very, very effulgent and she was glowing like a million suns and moons. And the demigods came there from the higher planetary systems and they came to offer prayers to her. And when the first time Kamsa saw Devaki, he thought, the child in the womb of my sister is going to kill me. That was his immediate response. So Krishna had just inspired him from within the heart that my sister's carrying the person who's going to kill me, finish me off. And so Krishna was, the story goes that the demigods come, they offer these amazing prayers, and then Krishna appears from the womb of Devaki in the prison cell. And it's very interesting because Devaki and Vasudeva are paranoid. They're living in fear of Kamsa. Kamsa could just knock them off at any time. So they're living in great fear. And when Krishna was born, he didn't come out as a little baby with two arms and two legs and crying and with an umbilical cord wrapped around him. He came out with four arms and a crown and opulent jewelry, the Kostuba money and garland, and he came out ready for action with a club, conch, lotus and a disc in his hands. And so immediately Devaki and Vasudev, their fear, they weren't fearful. There was no need for fear. Why would they be fearful? They got someone who's just appeared, their son has just appeared and he brought along his chakra, his Siddhasan chakra. So there's no need to fear Kamsa. And Vasudev offered many wonderful prayers, and then Devaki offered many beautiful prayers in glorification of her child Krishna, who happens to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we know that he manifests into a two-armed form of Krishna, and that form is a very, very attractive form. It's a captivating form, and it's a form that Prabhupada says one time that form, Krishna performed his superhuman activities to attract the minds of the mental speculators and the mystic yogis who are just lost in another world. And Krishna does so many incredible things that they get the message that this person's not ordinary. Kritavan kilakam mani sahara mani keshava. So that Krishna and Balaram come together in the material world and perform superhuman activities, and they attract the minds of everybody. So he appears and he's transferred. So when he reduces back to his normal human form, Vasudev, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he creates this amazing scenario, this amazing scene around his birth. And all the demigods have taken birth, and Devaki loses all these children, and Kamsa's got her in shackles, in iron shackles, in his cell, prison cell in the palace in Mathura. It's an extraordinary appearance. You know, it's not like taking birth in the North Shore Hospital or something. There's something very extraordinary, his birth. And it's to prove that he's not a normal person. He wasn't conceived in a normal way. Krishna wasn't conceived in a normal way. Krishna was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki and went through the heart. It was a heart transfer. Well, Prabhupada said when Vasudeva impregnated Devaki with Balaram, he initiated her with bhakti, with Balaram. So very extraordinary. Ati matyani bhagavan gudakapato manushaha, performing superhuman activities which are purifying. When we hear about them and understand them and we recite them and we glorify them, we become very purified. And that is the process for dealing with our anger, with our madness, with our illusion, with our lust, with our greed, with our envy. We deal with that by glorifying Krishna, kirtan, kirtaniya sadahari. And that's why it's glorified. Param vijayate Sri Krishna sang kirtanam. Lord Krishna's kirtan is glorified because it cleanses us of all that stuff that we don't want. Savatma snaparam. It's a big bath for the atmans, for the mind, for the soul, for the intelligence, and for the senses. And so this wonderful personality, Krishna, he is transferred to by Vasudev across the Jamuna to Vrindavan, not in Mathura, and Yogamaya appears there. And Kamsa tries to kill her, but she releases herself and she tells Kamsa that, too bad, you know, the person who's going to kill you has already taken birth, so you better be on guard. And that's Kamsa starts to up the ante on killing the babies in Brajamandal, and he's killing them left, right and centre after that in a very demoniac way. But Krishna, as we said, or as Jaya said, he's not really, his purpose isn't to sort out these demons. His purpose is to come and reciprocate with the devotees, those who have affection for him, and to make sure that they make the transition from this lifetime to the next successfully. Sometimes Prabhupada said, what's the use of being a prime minister in this life if in the next life you become a dog? There's no use. So Krishna comes to make sure that we make this transition, or his devotees make this transition from material life here, the material world, through purification and connection with the transcendental energy, the holy name, to the spiritual world. And that holy name is the spiritual world. Prabhupada said in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam that Krishna appears in the Hare Krishna movement in his age of Kali through the holy name. And he says that Hare Krishna and Krishna are non-different. The holy name, Krishna, and Krishna himself are non-different. And therefore, we have access, we have a technology that can deal with these anathas. And we have a process that we engage in a positive way that is very blissful and enlivening and enlightening, inspirational, and that helps us to develop a whole positive sense of our identity as a spirit soul, a whole positive reality, that we're a spirit soul, the eternal servant of Krishna, and that is blissful. We're happy about that. It's not, oh, we're a spirit soul, and what am I going to do about all my desires, and what am I going to do about this and that? We're a spirit soul, we're servants of Krishna, and we're very, very happy and blissful to be in that situation. So that's Krishna consciousness, it's a positive alternative. When we were in Australia recently, we saw this picture of this amazing bus, and it had Krishna consciousness plastered over it, the positive alternative, right? And from the 70s. And Crossways downtown used to have that, the positive alternative, and it really is a positive alternative. And those who are up for it, those who want to experience something that is beyond the mundane realm of, you know, the 9-to-5 grind, so to speak, then plug into this Krishna consciousness. We plug in and we experience, we might be doing 9-to-5 work, but we can experience transformation in the consciousness that we do the work in. And that's the main thing, that we develop that consciousness, that we're connected with Krishna, we're servants of Krishna. I won't tell my story of the wives of the proud Vedic Brahmanas tonight, which I told today, probably twice. But Krishna's pastimes are very, very attractive and wonderful. And Mother Yashoda, she gave us the process to connect, and that is to always chant Krishna's glories, Tad Bala Charitaniva, to chant the glories of Krishna's childhood pastimes, his activities, and to fully immerse ourselves in the spiritual consciousness. I'd like to finish. I know it's been 4:45 the whole time I'm speaking. I'd like to finish in a few minutes with a verse from the Bhagavatam. And that verse, it's spoken in relationship to Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. Now, Parikshit Maharaj, he's a great king, emperor of the world, and he's been given time, he's been given his notice, that he's got 7 days to live. And he discovers that the best thing, he was inspired, that the best thing he could do for 7 days would be to sit down and hear about Krishna, to hear and chant about Krishna and his incarnations and his activities. And that would help him to overcome all of his material attachments. So he did this, and he was well into his maybe fifth or sixth day of this recitation, and he wasn't eating, he wasn't sleeping, he wasn't distracted, he wasn't even thinking of eating or sleeping. Parikshit Maharaj, he was so enlivened. So then, at the beginning of the 10th canto, he's very anxious to hear. He's becoming very, you know, excited. The 10th canto is Krishna. Krishna's going to appear in the 10th canto. Here goes Krishna's childhood pastimes. We're going to hear about Krishna's pastimes and activities with his devotees. We're going to hear about Krishna in Vrindavan and Mathura and Dwarka. And he was getting very, very excited about this. And so Sukadeva Goswami, apparently, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, asked him if he wants to take a break. You know, we've done 9 cantos. You'd like to have a break. You could have a drink. Take a drink or something. Have a rest. But Parikshit Maharaj was like, he is saying, no, I'm not going to have a drink. Last time I wanted a drink, look what happened the last time I had a drink. Last time I had a break, I was cursed and ended up in this situation. So I'm not going to go there again. We're going to stay absorbed in Krishna Katha. And then he got this, he was inspiring Sukadeva Goswami to speak. And it said he got this realization that this Hari Katha, this Krishna consciousness, is a medicine to cure the disease of materialism, to cure the anger, the greed, the envy, the lust, the madness and illusion. That Krishna consciousness can cure that by hearing it. We hear it submissively in the right mood. That's the Babo Shadashota Manobida Amat. It's a medicine, Oshadi, for material disease that we have in the heart. We all have this heart disease, the same problem. All of us have got the same problem. It's eating away our heart, our hearts. And the medicine for that heart disease is Krishna Katha. Babo Shadi Shota Manobirama. We have to hear, the medicine is poured in the ear. And we have to hear that sound vibration of Krishna consciousness. And it helps us to deal with this contaminated heart, the diseased heart. And then having received this medicine, for our material condition. It said, Nivritti tashayo pagiyamanat, those who are free from glorification, from glorifying the mundane personalities of this world, from going for this material satisfaction here, they will fully appreciate and benefit from this medicine. Upagiyamanat, and they'll loudly broadcast it. Broadcast this medicine to others. Just as when we get when we get some form of relief from a particular disease, and somebody puts you on to a cure, and you get all excited about the echinacea or this type of honey and mix it up with this particular tea and brew it up for 10 minutes and it works, it cleared your throat or it cleared your sinuses or whatever it was. And then as soon as someone says, oh, I've got this cough and exactly like the same symptoms, Prabhu, I know how to fix it up, I've got the cure. And then you tell them the cure and it's all good. And then it passes on, right? Everybody gets excited about it. Upagiya Marat. Everybody's broadcasting it, glorifying it. This is an amazing cure. So Parikshit Maharaj says, I've got the cure for the material disease. To chant, to hear and chant about Krishna. And he says, I don't want to take a break. I want to keep glorifying Krishna. I want you to glorify Krishna. I want to hear about Krishna. And that'll enable us to become free from our material disease, from this heart attack that we're all experiencing non-stop. So let us absorb ourselves in this Janmashtami, in hearing and chanting about Krishna, especially taking shelter of the holy name of the Lord and Krishna's prasad. And we have amazing access to this transcendental energy of the Lord. And once we go there, we develop this taste that is higher than anything. We don't want to go back for anything less. I mean, once you've had, you know, a veggie burger or it's pretty hard to go back to a Big Mac. It's param drishtva. It's a higher taste, a higher experience, isn't it? Krishna consciousness through food, through the senses, through the nose, through the eyes, through the ears. It's a wonderful reservoir of pleasure. Sensual pleasure in a spiritual way. So thank you very much for inviting me here, Jai Shiva Prabhu, and thank you for putting up with me, those who have heard me once or twice today, and those who heard me for the first time, thank you for putting up with me for the first time. And I hope we become inspired to really connect with Krishna on this Janmashtami and all Janmashtamis. Every day is a festival in Krishna consciousness. Festival for the senses. Any questions or comments or realizations you'd like to share on this Janmashtami Eve 2011? I'm sure there is. When we were mingling before, it was a very good, very interesting process. We don't often do that, you know, like in the temple especially. You don't say, chat with the person next to you. But it was very interesting. It was a very nice mood, like being in a workshop or something. But I felt immediately at home. But it was very interesting to see people connecting and like that, reconnecting. And I met Lokanath for the first time. This is Lokanath here. He's from Malaysia, from Penang. And he's no doubt into the IT world and connecting with Krishna through the ether, right? Connecting others. And Shivan, I met you last time. Shivan, isn't it? Shivan. And his mother and sister here. Very nice process. Lokanath, have you been to a Janmashtami celebration before? No, first one. Yes. Very good. Here's Nimai and Kevala. And Devaki Nandana has got a question. Yes, Devaki Nandana.
I worship Krishna every day.
You worship? You worship Krishna every day? How do you do the puja? What do you do? You do this. Cool. Thank you, Devaki Nandana, for sharing that with us. Actually, Yadu does. He worships also. He worships Nrisingadev every Sunday. He worships a form of Nrisingadev. Every day he worships, but he worships the deity of Nrisingadev. Did you know he's got a deity of Nishingadak? Yadu might share some of his realizations with you later about worshipping, because he's very serious about his worship. He doesn't miss a Sunday worship of Nishingadak. Nishingadak worship's not a small thing. Maybe Yadu was some kind of a Hovalam Bhakta or something in his last life. Came from the mountains. Krishnanandabhu? Is it another alternative?
Is it an alternative? Or is it more alternative?
One of the problems we have in preaching is fanaticism, and many groups suffer from this, and it's very negative, because it's all about, you know, conversion. We want to convert you to our religion. If you don't become our religion, then you're scum on the street kind of thing. Almost. Sometimes you get a good whack on the head downtown in Queen Street by these Bible bashers that really hate the Rhodians in a big way. Some of them don't hate them so much, but some of them really hate us with a vengeance. That there's only one way, and that's to God through Jesus. But I was told that actually the translation is that the only way to God is through the Son of God. And that's a technical kind of a translation of the Hebrew or the Greek. It's the Son of God, not necessarily Jesus. We're all sons of God. So there's plenty of ways to get to Jesus. And we accept Jesus as a guru, as a Son of God. So we believe there is Krishna consciousness is an alternative. And Prabhupada wasn't so much into transforming people from taking people away from the Christian churches or from the mosques or anything. That wasn't really his mission. He said, you become a good Christian, that's good. If you become a good Christian and chant the Lord's Prayer and you clean up your act, that's good. Be a good Christian. Be a good Muslim. There are many good Muslims on the planet. Many good ones that are very religious. They don't take intoxication. They're very, quite straight. So be a good one. But the alternative is that we're trying to encourage people to be in integrity with their belief. So, I mean, we believe it is a positive alternative, and there are Shastric injunctions that say there's no other way than chanting Hare Krishna. No other way. But we don't take that out onto the street with kind of an aggressive, you know, fanaticism, because it's not very attractive. There are other ways. According to the modes of material nature, we have a different inclination, a different faith. So there are definitely other ways. To say there's only one way is not correct. There's many ways, but some ways are like the fast track, and some ways are, you know, a meander a little. Take you off.